So there's this well-known prayer in Buddhism. May all beings have happiness and the cause of happiness. May they be free of suffering and the cause of suffering. May they never be disassociated from supreme happiness, which is without suffering. May they remain in boundless equanimity, free from both attachment to close ones and rejection of others. So I want to really talk about the personal implication of this. I mean, it can be a prayer, it can sound very wonderful and altruistic, but may not have relevance to life, and especially the life of the world of which we're all participants. So as we know, the headlines continue to be war, and the suffering goes on unabated now, I don't know, 6-7 weeks in Ukraine, and the violence only continues, and the pouring in of armaments to accelerate only continues. It's a very typical human response. And of course, like in all wars, people choose sides, and each side has a narrative to justify themselves. This is just the nature of war. I mean, and human beings, we have short memories. So even though now, you know, in our country, the press, we're on one side and we see there's an enemy over there and there's somebody we align ourselves with, and we bemoan the destruction of life and death. Yet, if we know anything about our own history, we know that we incinerated several hundred thousand people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki with the first dropping of the atomic bomb, civilians, that is, and destroyed cities. For those of us who remember the Vietnam War, we know we did horrendous things there. Carpet bombing and dropping napalm fire on human beings and incinerating them. And so, I mean, I don't need to go on up to our recent time, but this is just the nature of what human beings do to each other. And they always justify it. And so it's important, as the kind of the choosing of sides and the glorification of violence once again continues, to please remember there is another way. But it's so rarely tried by human beings. And this is the path. In these four stanzas, there is another way for human beings to live. And I was reflecting, well, why is it with all these wars and endless violence and destruction that's just part of human history, do we just so jump into it once again, willy-nilly, right? Glorifying the violence. You know, even though there have been, over the course of, at least in our own century, you know, mass movements against war and the war, yet they continue, right? Human beings have short memories. And I thought, it's because of this, you see. And it really comes down to each of us that without a kind of fundamental shift in how individuals, human beings, see themselves, see life, and just have a different orientation, it's very hard for society to change, because it's so hard for human beings to change. You know, there was a great, in Buddhist history, when just a century or so after the Buddha was alive, there was a great Indian king, Ashoka. He was a great warrior king, head of a great kingdom. And it is said that he, you know, great conqueror. He glorified war. and he glorified the power of his army. And he had an experience where right after a great battle, he, in his chariot, he went out and inspected the battleground. And when he actually saw the destruction and the death and the suffering that his army, under his command, had unleashed, he was just distraught, you know, because he saw beyond the glory of the conqueror. And he saw the you know, what the cost is to human beings. And he changed. I mean, he became this great, he embraced Buddhism, he totally changed. And actually the symbol of Buddhism, which is the eight-spoke wheel, he took from the war chariot. He made his symbol, you know, he gave that chariot another meaning, the wheel of Dharma, the wheel of truth. May all beings have happiness and the cause of happiness. Wonderful words. I would say everyone here, what? Anybody here disagree with that? No, beautiful. We even say it. We bring it into our meditation. And yet, if I asked each of us, well, why don't we just close your eyes and ask yourself, is that really my constant wish for myself and all beings? That they be happy, and that they all have the causes of happiness. And please see, it says all. So ask ourselves, is that really my heart mind? Consciously, I am continually nurturing that wish. So many of us who practice meditation, practice mindfulness, have come to a spiritual path. Say these words. If I said, in your heart, do you really wish for happiness for yourself? Just close your eyes and ask yourself, is that a constant wish of mine? May I be happy? And may I have the causes of happiness? Buddhism, everything is cause and effect. This is not just tra-la-la happiness. Understands that to truly be a happy human being, we need to cultivate and have the causes of happiness. So let's take a moment and ask ourselves, honestly, do I really, in my deepest aspiration for myself, do I wish for my happiness? Do I want to be happy? Is that very clear? Not just as a, what am I doing this weekend? I want to have some fun. I mean, all human beings want to be happy, you see. That's why we do all the crazy things we do. We want to be happy. But to really say, yeah, I don't want to be continually having to do things. I want to be happy. And I want to create the causes of happiness in my life. So please ask yourself, is that true for me? Very consciously. Every day, in my morning, getting myself set for the day, do I reflect in this way? Today I want to cultivate the causes of happiness in my life. It's very hard to really generate it for others in the world if we can't even do it for ourselves with a genuineness. If I don't really care about myself and my own happiness, well-being. And really wanting to create the causes and the conditions to nurture that happiness. Can I really genuinely generate that wish for the world? Please reflect for a moment. And then, of course, the next one has to go along with that. May I be free of suffering and the cause of suffering. Is that also very conscious within my mind every day? Today, I want to be free of suffering. And I want to be free of the causes of suffering. Well, we'd be very attentive to the mind states that we cultivate during the day, wouldn't we? I don't want to create suffering for myself. I will not nurture mind states that cause me to suffer. I will not do things and say things that cause me to suffer. Please ask yourself, is that really my aspiration every day, and do I live that? As Thich Nhat Hanh has taught us, if we want a peaceful world, we have to become peaceful people. If we want a loving world, we have to become loving people. And it begins first. If I can't even generate that with sincerity and act on it for myself, how will I ever really meaningfully do it for others, much less the world? And then, since we don't live in isolation, we live with others, just kind of look at the people you may live with, or the people you may be very kind of intimate on a daily basis interacting with. It could be family, friends, colleagues. Check your mind. When you interact with people throughout the day, is that really what's in your mind? I want you to be happy. That's what I really want for you. I want you to be happy. And I want to support and nurture all the causes and conditions today that will support your happiness. Just close your eyes and reflect. Is that the way I approach the world every day? I mean, my own, this is not the big world. This is my own little, very personal, interpersonal world, which is really the world we for most of us, that's the stage we act on. Most of us don't act on the greater stage. Society. Most of us, this is where our lives unfold, within ourselves and within our interactions with others. So in all my interactions with others, you know, real life interactions, is that what's in my heart and mind? I want you to be happy. And in any way that I can contribute to support and nurture your happiness. I mean, is that when we look at even the people we live with? The people we say we love, we care about. Is this really what's in our mind, in our interactions with them? Or do we get lost? And then the second one, in all our interactions with all the people of our life, may you be free of suffering and the cause of suffering. Again, is this our wish for people as we see them, as we interact with them, the people we live with? Not as a thought, you see, but as a very conscious aspiration that moves us to action. I don't want you to suffer in your life. I certainly don't want to contribute to your suffering, and I certainly would like to do anything I can to remove the sufferings of your life. Ask yourself, is that something as I move through my day that I'm very conscious of? We've become very functional people. We've become very task-oriented people. We often miss that we're interacting, even at work, in other places, in our neighborhoods. We're interacting with human beings. Human beings. And every one of them. Every one of them. Wants to be happy. That's the great commonality. Everyone wants to be happy. Nobody wants to suffer. As I go through my day, and as I, you know, is that in my awareness that everybody I'm interacting with wants to be happy, just like me? Doesn't want to suffer, doesn't want to be a pain, doesn't want to have an emotional affliction, just like me. Or do I see human beings very superficially, on the surface? In our society, we are more and more separate from each other, more and more divisive. We more and more define ourselves. When you define yourself, you're defining yourself in relationship to others. Defining oneself is a relative thing. This is who I am, and it's different than who you are, you see. So we more and more, it's like, let me tell you all the way we're different. And all we notice is the differences. But do we notice this great, most important, salient thing for Ukrainians and Russians? If you asked each of them, do you want to be happy? Yes. Do you not want to suffer? Yes, I don't want to suffer. And yet. You know, in Buddhist, traditional Buddhism, cosmology, we talk about Shakyamuni Buddha, Siddhartha, born 2,600 years ago in southern Nepal, northern India. But those countries weren't existent then. We call him the Buddha. But you know, in Buddhist teaching, there have been Buddhas before him. Shiking Buddha and Kwakuchanda Buddha, Kashapa Buddha. And there are many Buddhas coming after him. And there are many world cycles. And I mean, it's a vast cosmology. We don't need to get into it. You don't need to buy it, right? But it's very interesting. When the end of Shakyamuni's world cycle ends, there's a Buddha waiting. You know what his name is? Maitreya. Maitreya comes from Maitri, Metta. And it is said that Maitreya's practice that is bringing him to full enlightenment and Buddhahood is the practice of loving kindness. Very interesting. That's all he's doing as he prepares to, to help us out once again. His path is the path of loving kindness. I think it tells us something about the foresight our ancestors had about our society and what is really needed and will be needed. And, you know, how do we wean human beings off their proclivity and glorification of violence? To settle their disputes. And it's not just nations, it's individuals. I mean, our society is a very violent society, isn't it? Right? We just accept that. Lots of violence. Violence in families, violence in relationships, violence among strangers, right? Societal violence, systemic violence. I mean, you know, lots of different names, but we accept. You know, and violence comes from what? Anger, rage. So we might say, gee, I'm not violent, but I do know anger. I know rage. I know intolerance. Some of us may say, I even have experienced hatred for someone else or others. So we understand that the violence of the world doesn't come out of nowhere. Everything has causes and conditions. This is caused by that, that causes this. That's why Thich Nhat Hanh said in his great anti-war poems, we need to take the grenades are in our hearts, he said. Grenades are in our hearts. That's where we got to take them out first. The grenades that people are throwing at each other in war are only being thrown because people have grenades in their hearts. So we need to take out the grenades of our hearts. That's our practice, you see. Our practice is to transform our anger into love, our intolerance into tolerance. Disrespect into respect, our individuality into mutuality. That's what we're doing, you see. May all beings have happiness and the cause of happiness. May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. So really the first one is most important. If we can't have the wish to be happy, then the obvious obstacle, which is our suffering, will never be acted upon. So this is why traditionally metta or maitri or loving kindness, love, is the first that has to be cultivated. Because it also, that's what connects us to other human beings. You know, think about somebody you love. Just close your eyes. Think about somebody you love. You really care about them. And now imagine that they're suffering. I mean, they're suffering from an emotional affliction. They're functioning from financial distress. They're suffering because they just got bad news about a disease or something. They're suffering. What's your immediate response? Just think, what's your immediate response? This is somebody you love, somebody you care about. You don't have to think about it. Your immediate response is what? Anybody want to say it out loud? Yeah, you're sorry and you want to help them. Yeah, I mean, it's so simple. We don't have to think about it. We don't have to plan. We don't have to, you know, evaluate and assess. Right? Are they worthy of my loving kindness? Are they worthy of my compassion? Are they worthy of my help? No. Why is that? Because of loving kindness. Because of love. We love them. And you see, then the others just flow, right? If they're suffering, we want to help them, compassion. We take joy in, you know, the third one, we take joy in their successes. You know, yesterday we had our grandchildren over and our 7-year-old granddaughter was reading to us, right? Reading some. We kind of began with, like, you know, simple books, and then we pulled out more difficult books. I think the last one we got into was Millions of Cats, a great book. And she's reading to us, and you know what? Angie and I were happy. Why were we happy? We can read. You know, it's like, what's the big deal, you know? We were happy because she was happy that she could read, you see? You see, it's so natural, right? We take joy in the joy of others when we care about them, when we love them. Now again, and you see, then, you know, like if you think about your family, you know, do families ever have conflicts? Anybody ever conflicts in their family? People have disagreements. People have misunderstandings. People can get quite angry at each other. Anybody ever experience these things in their families? Okay. And if you care about your family, what's your response? Let them go at it. Let them destroy each other, right? Yeah, I don't care what they say, let them hurt each other, you know. Is that our response? No, what's our natural response? You know, what, how can I help? What can I do to reduce the suffering? How can I resolve this? How can I help them talk to one another? How can I help them understand one another, that they're each suffering, you know? Can you see? It's so natural. Right? And we have to be very careful in families that we don't what? Take sides. Isn't that what they want? You got different family members where they're coming. They want you to what? Take their side. Right? They want to come. What do they want? They want you to take their side. But if you want to be that one who can try to help resolve things, you realize I can listen to both sides, but I have to work to find harmony, to bring understanding. Isn't that true? I mean, that's the only, we know that. And yet, when we see peoples in the world go at each other, where is that? Where is that force to say, stop? Again, keep going back to Thich Nhat Hanh, because he set the template. He said, you know, people put the label enemy on another human being and they are killing their brother and sister. You can't kill them until you put the label enemy on. Once you put the label enemy, you reduce their humanity. And then we can act in a hateful, aggressive way. But if we see they're just like us, they want to live, they're afraid, you know, they're being whipped up to be angry. They want to preserve their life. And they think the only way they can preserve their life is killing you first. You see, I mean, it's just a spiral. And they're all caught in it. And again, each one of those human beings wants to be happy. Doesn't matter what side you're on, right? They don't want to suffer. They don't want their families to suffer. They don't want their children to suffer, their parents to suffer, their friends to suffer. It's so simple, isn't it? Yeah. So again, in our tradition, when we want a peaceful world, we want a world without war, we want a world where people take care of one another and care about each other and see each other as family, we realize, if I can't live that way myself, not just outwardly, I mean, a lot of us look good outwardly, but you know, what's really going on in our minds? And do I really live with loving kindness? Do I cultivate that in my life? For myself, I can't cultivate it myself. Do I really wanna, you know, I spend a lot of time teaching people. As a Dharma teacher, I do a lot of interviews with people, a lot of groups with people. They're all good people, right? And one of the things that's probably common to all of them is what? Why are they practicing Dharma? Why are they practicing meditation? What? They suffer, and they want to be happy. I mean, there's no other reason to practice. And yet, in my interactions with people all the time, what do I hear? What? They continue to suffer. They continue to suffer. Now, how could that be? How could that be? Because at some deep level, that yearning for happiness, that yearning to be free of suffering, has not really taken over their mind. It's there. It's part of the matrix of their life, but it's not central. It doesn't have it's not empowered. It's not something that, you know, throughout the day, as they're watching mindfully their mind, every time an afflictive mind state comes up, they know it. They're aware of it, and they have a commitment. What is that? I don't want to suffer. This is a suffering mind state. Stop. Cultivate what? Loving kindness, compassion, understanding, patience, you know, all the virtuous things, you see. Yeah, I mean, this kind of, you know, I've often said, Thich Nhat Hanh, Dalai Lama, you know, they look like a normal human being, don't they? You know, if you look at them, right? They're not extraordinary the way they look. They have human frailties, they have human bodies, they die. They go to the bathroom just like us. They eat, you know what I mean? They're just human beings. What's the difference between them and us? Why are they such developed human beings? Yeah, they're just committed and they practice. You know, they let that energy, in Buddhism we call that the energy of bodhicitta, that desire to be awake, to be free, and to liberate all beings, to help all beings. They allow that energy to really suffuse their body-mind. They allow that power. See, love has a power. And that's not something I'm making up. I mean, if people are familiar with Martin Luther King, he talks about the power. I mean, that's the power of nonviolence, the power of love. It's a power. It's an energy, right? Gandhi, I mean, and it's a powerful energy, but it has to be... It has to be cultivated, it has to be manifest, it has to be lived. You know, the people who believe in the power of violence, they live it, don't they? Right? I mean, those forces of anger and violence and domination, they're very committed to their path, aren't they? Doesn't matter what the situation is, let's kill, let's destroy, let's get rid of. But as Thich Nhat Hanh, again, I keep coming back to him, he says, man is not our enemy. We kill human beings, but man is not our enemy. Anger is our enemy. Hatred is our enemy. Intolerance is our enemy. Fear is our enemy. You see? And when you kill human beings, no matter how many of your enemies you kill, that's still there in human beings. It'll just pop up somewhere else, won't it? We all know that. Yeah, so again, big societal issues, big historical issues, big, and yet the world is made up of human beings, isn't it? Just like us. And so again, it behooves us to reflect. May I be happy. May I have happiness in my life and the causes of happiness. Let's return to that. And ask yourself again, is that very conscious in my life? No matter what I'm doing in life, at home, family, at work, wherever I show up, hanging out. Do I want to be happy and make the cause of happiness in my life? I don't want to suffer anymore. I want to free myself from all the things that I do, which means I think, I say, all those things that cause me to suffer. Am I committed to no longer nurturing and supporting them? See, then a world, when we start creating human beings, who live this kind of intention. They may not be perfect. They may not be developed along the path, but they have this intention. The way they see themselves and the way they see other human beings, we have the basis now, a solid, more solid basis for changing the world, for changing society. We know in the realm of climate and all that, you know, great, great suffering in the natural world. And it's playing out and causing great suffering to human beings. And yet what? If human beings can't even acknowledge their own suffering and want to be happy, can't take responsibility for their own happiness and suffering, how are they ever going to take responsibility for the world and the planet? You see how they're related, you see? You know, in the Buddhist world, everything is interconnected. Everything is interrelated. It's a great matrix of causes and conditions, which means we are connected. Each of us as individuals are connected to the whole. We are the whole. We are part of the whole. And so our own personal transformation does ripple, does affect. May all human beings have happiness and the cause of happiness. May they be free of suffering and the cause of suffering. May they never be dissociated from the supreme happiness which is without suffering. And may they remain in boundless equanimity, free from both attachment to close ones and rejection of others. So there's a lot in those other two, but if we just get the first one. Maitri, love. We have made a great step forward for our own personal, for our families, for our society, for the world. So please contemplate this deeply, reflect. And I want to stop a little early because I do want to, I mean, this is kind of very personal. Especially that, you know, why is it? That I have the teachings and the practices, which I intellectually am convinced have the power to really transform me. Why is it that I still suffer? It's a good question, isn't it? So I want to open the floor to people at home. They can chat in their question to Brian. Okay, and people in the hall, I want to hear from you. I mean, this is important. What is your response to this talk and the ideas presented? Take a moment just to digest. Yes, here, just wait, because we have people online, so they can't hear. Is it a young man here? And since you're wearing a mask, you'll have to talk up a little bit.
Okay.
And what is your name?
Jordan.
Yes, Jordan.
I was going to say, I think, I like what you said about how it's so simple. And I think it really is. But I think we chase immediate pleasures. I think that's what it reminded me of. I think that's, for me, I think that's why I continue to suffer. Yeah. You know, that's all.
Yeah, I think how old are you, Jordan?
32.
32. Well, in your 32 years, you have attained some wisdom. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we don't like, in our society, we don't like to acknowledge that side of life, do we? Right? And so we're willing to, rather than doing the work of the transformation of our suffering, of looking deeply, being present and transforming it. It's so easy, right, in our society to be distracted by things that give immediate pleasure. You know, short term. You know, only usually lasts as long as the activity is going on, or just maybe a little glow afterwards. And yet, when it's over, then what? We're back to what? Yeah, can you see? Or just the underlying, the boredom, the stress, whatever it is, right? It can be big, can be little. Yeah, so it takes what? It takes a willingness to what? Based on what you heard me say today, it takes a willingness to what?
My first thought is it takes a willingness to commit, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're on the track. To commit to what?
To commit to your own happiness.
Yes. Which implies immediately that you want to free yourself from your suffering, that which robs you of your happiness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's so simple, isn't it? We got to keep it simple. You know, I mean, we are, you know, because we live in a psychological world and books and everything, and you could, you know, we could have a million different issues, right? A million different issues that are getting in the way of, you know, but it's like underneath it all is what? I don't really believe, perhaps, or not committed to the idea that I can be happy and free of suffering, which is the basis of Buddhist psychology. It's kind of interesting. Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you.
Anybody online, Brian? Okay.
It says, anger and violence seem so intoxicating to the ego, and seem so susceptible to that, while compassion, love, and kindness aren't so ego-friendly. That body can be so hard on its ego persists.
Well, oh, so you didn't say that? Oh, you don't have a microphone. Okay, so the question is, there's something about anger and violence that is very empowering, right? And am I right, Brian? And there's something about loving kindness and compassion, they're kind of soft.
Specifically to the ego.
To the ego, to the self. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know. There's something about a war, isn't there? You know? Gets our blood flowing. Yeah. And, you know, and everybody, yeah, there is something kind of empowering about anger and hatred and self-righteousness. If anybody's ever been there, even as an individual, yeah, it's very empowering to the sense of self, to the nation's sense of self. We're right, they're wrong. We're good, they're bad. I mean, you know, we know that. But that's very dangerous, doesn't it? Because it doesn't acknowledge that the people that we're killing and destroying believe that they're right. That they're fighting the noble cause. So it's very dangerous. Yeah, and yes, I mean, so I would say, you know, going back to our great ancestors, the Buddha, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and others, you know, the force of love is a powerful force, but I think it's just, it's one we're not used to. We're not used to living from. So I would say, from the point of view of ego and self, that the power of love is much more powerful because it feels better. I mean, the anger that or the self-righteousness we feel is only momentarily empowering. You know, when we all have to come down from that one at some point, right? We all have to resolve our angers and our resentments and our hatreds. But also when we see the destruction. Maybe some of you have seen, been the victims of other people's violence, other people's anger, and you know that anger and violence leave in their wake great suffering, right? So I would agree with Matt that I think historically most people, I mean, Jesus Christ said what? Blessed are the peacemakers, right? I mean, anybody ever heard that? Blessed are the peacemakers. And I would imagine both Ukraine and Russia are Christian nations, aren't they? I mean, what can I say? And who else, Brian?
From Juan.
Yes, Juan. Yeah.
How can one approach such a situation?
Yeah, so that is a, all right, so the situation is, and that's a good point in Buddhist ethics. So, you know, is it ever justified? I think is what he's asking, you know, to save many, can you take the life of one? And that's a very interesting, you know, ethical point. And certainly Buddhists have always dealt with that one. So, our fundamental is what? To create happiness and end suffering. We understand that all human beings want to live. I mean, life is the most precious thing a human being has. To take the life of another, especially when they're not asking us to, is considered probably, you know, the greatest human violation we can do to another human being, to take their life. All beings want to live. Animals want to live. Right? So to acknowledge that means, you know, wow, to take life, there has to be a good reason, right? It's like the court of last resort. Now, there are, within Buddhist history, there are examples and teachings of there have been times when a great Buddhist has taken the life of someone to protect others as a last resort. But whenever I've received those teachings, it's always said, as a last resort, not the first resort. I mean, everything else has been tried, right? As well as the mind of the one who's taking that life of another is the mind of compassion. Not the mind of anger, not the mind of hatred, not the mind of fear, but understanding that this person is about to do great damage and harm to others, and I am protecting other peoples by taking their life. Right. So, yeah, so that can be done. But it's, again, you know, one has to have a very clear mind and a very compassionate mind to be able to act that way. Are there anybody else in the hall? Angie, are you raising your hand? And Matt, anybody else upstairs? Brian?
Yes. Paula says, in thinking about war,
yeah.
I wonder what your thoughts are about the U.S. entering into the World War II arena. How do we reconcile what
the yeah.
had we not, i.e., can war be done?
Yeah, so this is where it goes, you see. And I understand that. So people go, well, hold on a second. You know, Nazism, Germans are taking over Europe and they're, you know, murdering all kinds of people, you know. You see, it's like, you see, it's already in motion, you see. It's already in motion. It's deep in motion. But the seeds of that war, just like the seeds of this war. I mean, if you look at the history of what's gone on in the history of the USSR and Russia, and when the wall came down, and the changes they made, and the agreements that were made. I mean, you see that this present situation has roots and causes in the past. It didn't come out of nowhere. I mean, in the present moment, they justify all kinds of things, but it has roots, right? And World War II had deep roots. It had roots in World War I. It had roots in German history. And, you know, the current, you know, I didn't lose the election, right? It was stolen from me. You know, that was the myth in Germany after World War I, because all they had heard was how they were winning the war, right? And so when they lost the war, right, there was this whole thing was, it was, you know, behind the scenes, it was devious, you know what I mean? You know, it was stolen from us. So there was a whole myth already that, and anyhow, I don't need to go into it, but so this is the problem, you see? You know, but at some point, you see, this spiral, it's like in families, it's like with addiction, it's like with all the suffering that human beings do to each other, at some point in that endless unfolding, that endless spiral of whatever it is, at some point, we have to press pause, or it's never going to stop, right? At some point in this, again, this great human, you know, I mean, we're all armed to the teeth. You know, the major powers have enough firepower, armament power to blow this world up endless time. Crazy. And what do we do? What's our response? to the violence of the world. More armaments, more violence, more armies, more. I mean, when's it ever going to end? You see what I'm saying? All we're doing is creating causes for future violence and future wars. I mean, Buddhism is very simple, cause and effect. The Buddha said 2,600 years ago, right? There's only, you know, violence will never end by violence. Violence will only end by nonviolence. Anger will never end by more anger. Anger will only end by love. I mean, it's so simple. Yeah. Angie? Thank you, Paula.
I really appreciate this teaching, you know, to say that all beings want to be happy. I do feel like that's pretty strong in everybody's life. And what seems to be really missing is understanding the causes for happiness. There just seems to be mass confusion. So we do all these things that make us suffer. I can even look in myself and realize, yes, sometimes I get caught up in thinking that getting everything done on my to-do list will make me happier, when actually I need to just put it down and go outside and just stop. So I've been practicing for a while, and I see how confused I get sometimes over the causes of happiness, but I realize that behavior is being motivated by what I think will make me happy, what I think the causes of happiness are. So then I turn and look at society and young people in particular. They think the causes of happiness are likes on social media. I mean, there's just so much confusion, it seems like, in our world. And I would appreciate it if you could just speak to how do we help ourselves and others to really see clearly the causes of happiness.
Yeah, so I don't want to sound like I'm selling anything. I don't want to come off as a used car salesman. You know, it's what Morgan said, right? That you're saying the same thing. I mean, there is another way. You know, I mean, for me, you know, the Buddha Dharma is another way. Right? That explains, you know, explains just what you said, what Morgan said. Yeah. Yeah, worldly pleasures do not lead to happiness. Right? The cause of our suffering is our self-centeredness, our attachments, our unwillingness to see the superficiality of our life, and to see what's causing us to continually to stay stuck. There has to be a willingness. You know, it's very hard. I mean, one of the things, it's funny, you know, when my good friend Hogan and Chosen are here, and they're, you know, I've been at this 50 years, they've been at this 50 years. You know, we talk together. Yeah, and my sense is, you know, it's very hard for people like us, lay people who are fully immersed in the world that moves at such a pace, and there's so much busyness and activities and to-do lists, you know, that, you know, the Dharma, so like these teachings are given us, are big. You know, they're very simple, but they have big implications for life, right? Like doing life a different way. I mean, outwardly, you can stay, you know, you can stay married, you can stay in your relationships, you can still own a house, you can still have a career and save for your retirement. I mean, that still can go on, but it's an inward change, right? In how one lives life. And to do that, we need space and time to stop and to reflect deeply. And for many of us, it's like, you know, for example, here we are this morning. We're talking about deep things, aren't we? Deep, deep things today. You know, major implications. And yet for many of us, we're going to walk out of here, we're going to check our phones, check our email, check our this, check our that, get on with our day. And whatever we've reflected on today, this morning, will be gone. Right? Because we are... You know, this is the society we live in. Highly distractible. I mean, we're just busy, busy, busy. Our minds are occupied. So it's very hard for us to really get things deeply. You know, it wasn't that long ago in the realm of human history. People didn't have electronics. People didn't have TVs. People didn't have phones. You know what I mean? People. So life was what? Simpler. There was more space in the mind, right? You know what I mean? Life was just simpler. And so there was more time to reflect. You know, like when you're out there hoeing and tilling all day, you know, what do you get to reflect on? Right? I mean, now people have earbuds, you know, you can be out in the fields hoeing, but your mind can be preoccupied. So, yeah, we have to be strong. I mean, there's no other way around it. We have to go. You know, I'm gonna spend time today reflecting on what was shared at the talk, and I really keep asking myself, am I committed to my own happiness? But again, if we walk out of here, check our phones, blah, 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 get in the car, turn on the radio, get on with our day, same old, same old. I mean, unfortunately, that's just the way it is. Now, it doesn't mean that seeds aren't watered today. So there's, I don't want to be negative. So, I mean, you know, seeds are being watered, a little water gets through, and they can grow, but they'll grow slowly. If you really want to have them grow faster, then we have to be very deliberate, very conscious. You know, it's like watering plants, you know. If you really, you want your plant to grow, you water it regularly, you give it the nutrients it needs, it'll grow faster if you kind of, you know, water it now and then, and then only when you see it's wilted, or I better put some, you know, it's like us, you know. I better put some Dharma in me. I'm beginning to lose it. My mind's really getting stressed and out of control. I'm really, oh, I better, you know, better water myself with a little Dharma. I mean, there it is, you know. It's like how we, you know, it's only when the flowers are wilting that we remember to water them. We got to be better gardeners for ourselves, better cultivators. We're supposed to stop now, right? Is there any pith one up there? We'll just wait. We have more people on. I want to be fair. Yeah, so she's just sharing good Dharma, right? My actions of body, speech, and mind are the ground on which I stand, something that we repeat quite often.
Paul says, what about angry, violent people who think their happiness comes from when they win a war, but somehow triumph over another person?
Yeah, so, are there people, are there nations that think, you know, happiness will come when we end the war and we win? I mean, we always got to win. We don't want to lose. Yeah, of course. Right? And we'll have great parades and we'll have great commemoratives, but then we'll just be spiraling, you know, it'll just going to come up again. Why do we keep having wars? Anybody remember American history? First World War was called what? The Great War, because it was the war to what? To end all wars. I mean, if I really knew that this was going to be the last war, I might even sign up for it. But what did we learn? Violence only begets violence. You know, more wars. It never ends. We have to put an end. First, we put an end in our own hearts and minds. So why don't we stop? Okay? And before we end, indulge me for another minute. Close your eyes. Maybe 2 minutes. Close your eyes. And based on what you've heard today, and everybody here is an individual, everybody online is an individual, what was meaningful to you? And what do you want to take with you? Is there anything you've heard today that has struck you or you think is significant for you personally? And if that's true, how are you going to nurture that in your life? How are you going to bring it into your the reality of your life, your relationships, the way you look at things? Many of us know from, you know, organizational change, other types of change. We need a plan for implementation, don't we? Or it's never going to happen. So, as human beings, we're just like an organization. When we have an idea about how we want things to change, if we don't have a plan, something concrete, probably will not occur. So just ask yourself, what's my plan? What am I going to do differently? If there's anything I heard today really has meaning to me. This is the piece we're often missing. Buddha taught, we hear the teachings, we reflect on the teaching, then we practice. We don't spend enough time just reflecting. What did I hear today? What was meaningful to me? What struck me? Do I want to bring that into my life? Do I want to make the changes? You know, if we can't be honest with ourselves, who can we be honest with, as I say?